This program was brought to you by Eat On North. Eat On North is a casual restaurant where honest, uncomplicated food is served without pretension. Find Eat On North at hotelonnorth.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Farm Report, where we talk about the nitty-gritty of agriculture and food production each week. I'm your host, Holly Cederholm, broadcasting live from the Heritage Radio Network in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today, I'm excited to have two guests on the line, Ryan and Stuart Joyce of Joyce Farms. Located in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Joyce Farms is a family-run operation dedicated to raising high-quality all-natural meats, including poultry, beef, and game, for chefs, artisanal butchers, and educated consumers across the U.S. Among their offerings of heritage breed poultry is what they deem the world's best chicken. Joining me today are two representatives from Joyce Farms, brothers and the third generation of the Joyce family to be involved in the company, Ryan and Stuart Joyce. Ryan oversees the finance, human resources, and legal matters, while Stuart oversees operations. Ryan and Stuart, welcome to the Farm Report.
Thank you for having us.
Maybe you guys could, I don't know if we'll be able to differentiate voices, but maybe you could each introduce yourself so we can get a handle on that.
Okay, this is Ryan.
Hey, and this is Stuart.
Great.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So as I said, Ryan and Stuart, you're the third generation on the farm. Did you grow up in the business, and was it a natural transition to return to the farm after pursuing your degrees? Mostly I'm interested in how you both found your niche on the farm. Ryan, for instance, I don't personally know many farms that have a lawyer on staff, so maybe you could talk a little bit about how you guys fit into the landscape there.
Sure. That's definitely true. Not many small producers have lawyers on staff, but I guess both of us got started in the business when we were just kids. I mean, I remember, you know, building chicken houses throughout high school and college. Our father has a strong work ethic, and he wanted to make sure that was instilled in us. So we got, you know, probably the worst jobs you can imagine in the middle of August in North Carolina on a farm in a chicken house. It's not the most pleasant environment. But we enjoyed it and, you know, saved up some money to buy a car when we turned 16 and saved up some money to, you know, continue our education. And that's really how we got started in the business. And then both of us went to NC State for undergrad. And there's a strong connection at North Carolina State with the agricultural industry. So that, you know, definitely played an influence in our roles here. And I actually went to work for the company again after undergraduate, or yeah, once I graduated from NC State for about 2 years, and then I went back to the JD MBA program at Wake Forest, and I knew pretty much from the beginning that I wanted to stay in business, and the law degree is more to keep us out of court and away from attorneys, so not so much to be an attorney, but just to you know, help the business from a legal perspective, because we're regulated by the USDA, and you know, every business has contract issues, employment law issues, and I found it to be extremely helpful just on a day-to-day basis, even though I'm not actively practicing law.
Yeah. How many employees does Joyce Farms employ?
Total, including some of our temporary staff, we've got about 120.
Yeah. So there is, like you said, while that might not be a necessary role for smaller operations, you do probably have a lot more technical documents and that sort of thing that you're dealing with. So Stuart, what, as the operations manager, what kind of day-to-day function do you have within the company?
Nothing. Everything runs smoothly. So from the farm side all the way from sourcing the genetics from France twice a year, we actually import our own LaBelle Rouge French breed of chickens twice a year. Those are hatched in the United States. They're moved to a pullet farm at about 21, 22 weeks. Those birds are moved to a breeder farm where we actually collect the eggs, bring the eggs to our hatchery, set the eggs, and then hatch the chicks. They go to the grow-out farms, and from the grow-out farms, they go to processing. So there are a lot of steps that are involved with it. I'm oversee all the farm operations for our chickens, the pheasants that we raise, the guinea hens, the seasonal heritage black turkeys we do, and as well as the plant operations here at our facility.
So in terms of a couple of things in terms of the sense of scale, so these different facilities, are they all like adjacent on the same land? Like, how does that map out? And then also maybe we could get a sense of the number of the birds, like a head count in the turkeys and the chickens and that sort of thing.
Of course. Our main processing, our facility here in Winston-Salem, we do our harvest here. We have actually our hatchery here as well. We contract out our farms, our grow-out farms, and the breeder operations with growers who several years ago raised for larger companies. They were eventually let go because their houses were outdated. And we were able to use their older houses that have natural ventilation, drop curtains, and that kind of thing. And it's really worked out well for us. We follow the Label Rouge program of France, and there's certain strict guidelines we have to follow. And one of those is the distance between the farms and the processing facility. Our farms are right around 50 to 60 miles away. So driving, it's 45 minutes to an hour, no more. So the birds are not in transit long. We can control everyday aspects of it, travel down if there are any issues. And so we have day-to-day control of the operation.
And again, so how many how many animals do you have sort of in? I'm sure they're broken down into different groups. Like you have your pullets, and then you have birds of that are approaching harvest
right.
weight. So like, but what, then sort of to kind of paint a picture of what, how many birds there are?
The flocks vary from week to week. We set a certain number for our sales. For example, the heritage black turkeys, the Spanish black turkeys we do once a year. We're actually increasing that production. Although it seems large to us, it's very not. It's a small part, but we're doing around 4,000 of those a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the chickens vary each week. So it's a very, compared to the larger companies, we're very small. But it's a great opportunity for us to get into a niche market.
Yeah. And in particular, since you already brought it up, I'd like to get a little bit more into the unique genetics that you have on Joyce Farm. So you're dedicated to raising heritage livestock, and you've garnered notice for one breed in particular, which is through this. It's a French farm chicken, which my French is non-existent, so I'm going to stumble over this. But the Poulet Rouge Fermier, it's a type of program, like you said, it's sort of like a certification with requirements that chickens be raised in this style. And then you have a particular breed that you guys grow, in my understanding, the Redbro Connu, which from looking at the picture, it's a very distinct than what people might think of when they see a chicken. It has red feathers, and the biggest distinction is it has this naked neck. It looks like all the feathers have been kind of plucked around. It's like it's wearing like a skin necklace almost. So what, like, how did you guys in North Carolina get to be the only farm in the U.S. that's raising this bird?
There's other farms that are trying to do something similar to us, but they always take a different approach. We actually use the specific genetics for the best tasting chicken in the world. People in America often will crossbreed between different breeders and come up with something that's cheaper to produce and doesn't have the same culinary aspects of what we have. But it really all started through the Label Rouge program, and that was a program that the French government created to basically preserve the heritage breeds and the artisan old world farming methods. And there's certain requirements that are involved in that program, how many houses or chickens per house, how the distance between your farms and the processing facility, you know, everything has to be air chilled and several other requirements. And we took that concept and brought it here. And one of the main requirements in the Belrose program is to have certain heritage genetics. So our father actually went to France and asked one of a company there that maintains the old heritage heirloom chicken genetics for the best, you know, culinary bird in the world, and they came out with the Poulet Rouge, and that bird is an extremely rustic breed that hasn't been grown in over 100 years, and, you know, we're the first company to really produce it here on a somewhat commercial scale. That production is still smaller than we'd like it to be.
Yeah, because it seems like some of these the requirements for the Label Rouge program, which I would love to get into more detail on those, seem like they make sense in terms of a small-scale operation where you're like, we want a smaller distance to travel between where they're raised and where they're slaughtered, and we want facilities that are I don't know exactly the requirements of the facilities, so maybe you could outline those for me, but I'm assuming there are more space and ventilation and those type of things. So it's scaling that up. Is that challenging? So maybe you could talk a little bit about the specific sort of ways that they're raised on your farm.
Sure. You know, it's definitely more challenging because the genetics specifically, our bird takes 84 days to get to market weight. And the feed conversion is through the roof compared to a commercial bird. So if you buy a commercial bird that's fed organic feed, it still, you know, hatches in an egg and goes to market in 42 days. Our bird takes, and you know, almost no feed conversion. You get it's a highly efficient bird still. Our bird takes over, 5 pounds of feed?
Our feed conversion is over 3 pounds to 1 pound of live weight, and it takes twice as long. It takes just over 84 days to produce after dress weight a 3 pound dress bird.
And the feed that you're talking about, I just wanted to clarify, the feed that you're talking about, is this a grain based feed or?
Yes, it's a corn and soy, no animal byproducts, all vegetarian diet. And back to the house, as far as, you know, sourcing the houses we need, like I mentioned earlier, it's really worked out well for us. There are some larger poultry companies around this area that either went out of business or were bought out or moved, or just cut these farmers off. And we actually, I get calls all the time. Unfortunately, we don't have the production now to bring them on, but we do have growers that want to raise our chickens because it is easier for them. There's more space in the house, fewer birds. It's old, simple way. There's not computers, fans, ventilation issues. So it really is a simpler way of farming. It's going back to the old way.
And so are there other, in terms of access to outdoors, is that different than what some of the conventional commercial poultry operations are doing?
Yes. Yeah, one thing that differs with the Label Rouge program, I'm sure everyone's heard of the USDA organic standards in the United States.
Yeah.
We decided not to be USDA organic, and there's several reasons. We find the Label Rouge program, which we follow with the Poulet Rouge and our other game birds, to be much more superior. Our Poulet Rouge are Whole Foods or the GAPS Global Animal Partnership Step 4. They are pasture-centered. They are certified by a third-party audit company. Our birds spend majority of their time outside. We have access points, and the difference between what we do with the Label Rouge standards and against the organic standards, organic is just those birds have to have access to the outside.
Yeah.
There's no defined area outside. It could be a 4x4 square for 12,000 chickens, and as long as they have access to the outside, they're considered organic birds. We offer several acres of pasture per flock.
And how big are the flocks?
We usually run between 3,000 and 4,000 per flock.
Mm-hmm. So you were saying, each flock has several acres of pasture, and are they like rotated on them, or do they have free access? Like, what does that look like?
Yes, there. It's just an open pasture. It's fenced in. We also provide hay bales outside so they can jump on them. They tend to like those. They scratch on them. We scatter whole grain to encourage foraging. We also have blinds and perches that they can sit on and perch naturally outside in the pastures.
Yeah, they sound like really happy birds.
They are.
Are there other, so in terms of other differences between the heritage birds and the commercial birds, in terms of some of the commercial breeds of broiler birds, they basically, they just like look like meat on legs as they're developing. I mean, you've said that their development is like half the day to maturity as the birds that you're dealing with. They get, I've raised them in like chicken tractors before, and as you're like moving them as they get older, they like don't even really walk that much. They're just like drumsticks. And so I don't know if you've noticed any difference between kind of the shape of the bird, the activity of the bird, or the maybe even like the fat to meat ratio. Like, what are some of the other distinctions that there might be?
The biggest thing with the Poulet Rouge, because it is a slow growing heritage breed, it takes longer to grow to say a 3 or 4 pound dress weight. One of the biggest things is the density inside the house. Is our birds are given a little over 3 square feet per bird. The organic requirement is 1 square foot per bird inside the houses. As you'll know too, the feeds are different on that type of bird and ours. We actually slow down the growth of our birds and reduce the energy and the fat content in our diets because we don't want to push the birds. They have elongated legs, breasts, and their whole meat structure is different.
Yeah.
One of the most noticeable things when you look at our bird compared to a commercial bird, you'll notice ours doesn't have the fat layer underneath the skin. And one of the reasons is on the commercial bird, they're growing so fast and have such a high energy diet that the fat doesn't have time to marvel into the meat. Whereas with our Poulet Rouge, it's actually in the meat, which gives it a great flavor.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. When you were saying that they've been vetted as the world's best tasting chicken, first I want to know who has that job of tasting all of the different chickens and determining that standard. But then I was curious as to how that broke down literally in the animal. And it seems like that would definitely be one of the reasons. Is there? So you said that the composition is different too. Do you see that play out in terms of like smaller breasts or like larger legs or like what? Are there differences in that regard?
Yes, the breasts are smaller compared to a commercial white feathered chicken in the United States. It does have a longer legs. The commercial white feathered birds have little short, stocky legs and a lot of breast meat. And that's been bred over the years because Americans, the majority of them, want the most amount of breast meat they can get for the cheapest price. Not a lot of people like dark meat in this country. And with the Poulet Rouge, we have more dark meat and a little less breast meat, but it's not as much focused on the breast as the commercial birds.
There's something interesting on the NationalChickenCouncil.org website that talks about, it's a chart, basically. It shows the performance of U.S. broilers. And in 1925, a chicken took 112, this is a commercial chicken, took 112 days to get the market weight, which is 2.5 pounds live weight. And 1 pound of meat was produced for every 4.7 pounds of feed. And in 2014, they brought it down from 112 days to market weight to 47 days. And now the birds, instead of 2.5 pounds, are weighing over 6 pounds. And it only takes 1.89 pounds of feed to put on 1 pound of meat on the bird.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the industry's really done an incredible job to make, you know, the bird grow
fast, efficiently
and you know, pretty quickly. But that definitely has had an impact on the flavor. And back to the flavor, you're asking if, you know, who's got the job of figuring out the best-tasting chicken.
Yeah.
There's actually in the Poulet Rouge program, each product that's given that certification is basically put to the test every year. And you can have it 1 year and lose it the next, but there's a blind taste test that's conducted every year, and you know, you've got to keep up with the flavor. Just like, you know, there's no work not changing anything, I guess. It's the way Mother Nature intended chicken to taste. But the genetics that we use is hands down every year in the Lavelle Reese program, and it's won several awards over there for taste and quality.
And just to clarify, like within the Lavelle Rouge program, you're growing, like, are there different breeds of chickens? I'm a little confused with the, like, the terminology. So you, I was reading on your website, you have this Red Bro Quo Nu. Again, my French,
right,
not very good. But so is that, are there different birds and you've just found that this is the one that works for your system, or how have you?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, there's actually, you know, Americans aren't, they don't really understand that there are different breeds of chicken. People understand the difference between tuna and salmon. But when it comes to chicken, you can buy an organic chicken, and that's, you know, you can pay a huge premium for it. And it's the exact same genetic bird that you buy at a drive-thru, you know, that comes in a bucket. It's just fed something different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's, I mean, if you walk into any butcher shop in Europe, pretty much all, definitely in France, you'll see game, you'll see rabbits, you'll see, you know, 10 different breeds of chickens. Most of the time, they actually leave the head and feet on, and some of the feathers as well, just so you can, that way you know it's authentic.
Yeah. So we're going to take a short break right now, and when we return, I'd like to get a little more into the different labels involved in meat production. So we'll be right back.
Help me find a way outside, away from all the madness. Keeping everybody on the toes now, making it so hard to keep my balance. Balancing between the people we once were before we were so insecure. But we had suspicious minds for everything.
Hi, I'm Brian Alberg, and I'm the executive chef at Eat On North in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts. Eat On North in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts is a casual restaurant where good, honest, uncomplicated food is served to our guests. Our restaurant is part of the hotel called Hotel On North, the newly opened boutique hotel in downtown Pittsfield. We source local ingredients from our neighboring farms and offer an all-day dining menu of flavorful American cuisine for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and on weekends we serve brunch. Our oyster bar serves up delicious shellfish and oyster samplers until 11 p.m. Check out our menu at eatonnorth.com and follow us on Instagram.
You're tuned into the Farm Report. Joining us today are brothers Ryan and Stuart Joyce of Joyce Farms in North Carolina. We've been discussing the genetics of some of their poultry on their farm, and I'd like to continue in the vein of some of the labels that they use on the farm. So we talked a little bit about the fact that you guys aren't certified organic, and that you follow a France's Lavelle Rouge program, which you find to be superior based on different criteria. But I just wanted to back up a minute and talk a little bit about, there's so many labels that are at the grocery store. I mean, there's the organic, there's all natural, and then there's ones that are specific to livestock, like pastured and free range, which we've talked a little bit about that. But so these labels flag different environmental conditions, like outdoor access and types of feed for customers who aren't able to actually have that conversation with their farmer. But I noticed in digging around a little bit on the Joyce Farms website that you guys have quite a few different ways that you describe your meat. And we haven't talked at all about the fact that you also sell beef. But so I was wondering, like, in looking at the beef, it's you use for the beef and the poultry, you have this category where you call it naked, and then kind of delineate that it's free range and grass fed in terms of the beef. There's no hormones, there's no antibiotics. So I was wondering if you could just break down the labels that you've chosen and what they actually mean.
Yes. Well, to start with the free range, that term used to mean something, I'd say. You know, everybody wanted a free range chicken. Well, that term is thrown around loosely. We are now using the phrase pastured centered. There's no requirement with free range. They can, like I said, it could be a 4x4 square or free range access. That doesn't actually define how much space is outside. And with the naked terminology with the beef and our poultry, it just means nothing has been added. Of course, no antibiotics, no hormones, no steroids, and it's just a clean product. But with the comparing it to the organic, there's some other issues that we saw with the organic program. If you will look on the requirements of organic, antibiotics cannot be administered within 24 hours, after the first 24 hours. So that means if a chicken is hatched at the hatchery, they could actually receive an antibiotic vaccine in the first 24 hours and still be labeled organic. We never use antibiotics. We haven't had to use antibiotics because of the breed. It's so robust and hardy and healthy. And so that's just a few things with the public and all of the marketing claims you said you see in the store. There's so many different words being thrown out, but you really have to study and understand what exactly Sterna means and what's behind it.
Yeah, one of the ones that I'm curious about is, do you use the term natural or all natural, I think?
Mm-hmm.
What does that one mean?
That means no artificial ingredients and minimally processed, according to USDA.
Okay.
The good point upon that is that it really, the ultimate label confusion comes down to the agency or department approving the labels. It comes down to USDA. USDA is really created all the confusion because we can submit a label one day, and depending on who we get there, it's either approved or not, and it's based on luck, I guess. There's really no consistency, but according to them, natural means no artificial ingredients and minimally processed.
Okay.
And it's just like the no hormones in chickens. We used to not put that on our label because we thought it was misleading. Because the federal regulations prohibit the use of hormones in chickens. And so every time that's on a poultry label, there's got to be an asterisk or some disclaimer that federal regulations actually prevent you from doing it. So all that claim really means is you raise your chickens legally. But our customers, people, I guess, just don't take the time to really understand what it means. If it's not on the label, even with that disclaimer, they questioned whether ours was raised with hormones or not, so we ended up having to put it on the label.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just, there's one, not being educated, but it's just there's such, like you said, there's such an onslaught of different labels, and the regulations of them might not be as clear or consistent, and they change. I mean, there's different rounds. Like, I know the natural label is coming. There's a comment period that's open until the middle of May right now, so it's like they're revising them as they go along. One of the labels that I hadn't seen before, besides Naked, I'm not familiar with that one, but this one I think goes back to the Le Bel Rouge program, is the, maybe it doesn't, maybe I'm making this up, but the air chilling. I've never seen that before. So when I've not slaughtered a lot of birds at once. I've raised like maybe a batch of 50 broilers and done it with a group of friends, the slaughter process, but once we've done the slaughter and the evisceration and the plucking, or the plucking and then the evisceration, we dunk them in a bucket of like ice water to get them down to the regulated temperature. So I wasn't familiar with this air chilling, and I was wondering if you could talk about the benefits of that and why you do that.
Yes, the air chilling is, if done correctly, like in France, it can add tremendous flavor and quality to the bird. What we do with the Poulet Rouge and our game birds, as soon as they're done plucking in their process, go through evisceration, they're actually hung on racks, moved into a cooler that's about 30, 32 degrees. They're hung in there, and they dry naturally in a cold environment. We do not add any chlorinated water, do a dip or anything like that. You'll notice on a lot of chicken in a supermarket that you buy, it says, may retain up to 8% water or moisture.
Mm.
We actually lose yield by doing air chilling. So if we spend all this time, raising the bird right, selecting the genetics, and really processing them by hand, and we just want to keep that the special techniques going through the entire process and adding as much flavor and culinary quality as we can, and that's where we ended up with the air chilled. A lot of other companies do promote and offer air chill, but most of the time those birds are actually dipped into a chlorinated bath in between. So they do have some faster chilling effects with the ice water and chlorine. But we are actually 100% air chilled. The birds go straight from out of the harvest room, and they're put on the racks and go straight to the cooler until they're down to temperature, and then go to pack out.
And so do you think the flavor is because it's losing some of that water weight and it's more concentrated, or like you said, it improves the flavor with the air chilling, you were saying.
Right, because we're not adding any additional water or moisture or chlorinated water to help bring the birds down to temperature.
Yeah, those birds, if you water fill a bird, it can pick up to 6% of retained chlorinated water into the meat.
Okay.
And, letting our birds relax, I guess, slack out kind of after being processed and they're air chilled, it does preserve a lot more of the flavor, the natural flavor that's in the bird.
And you're doing all of this really great work with flavor, with genetic and rearing the bird towards flavor. And so who is the target customer, and how are you marketing the products on your farm? And I guess how has that historically evolved over the farm? Because like we said before, you're the third generation. So I'm interested how this all developed.
We market mainly to high-end white tablecloth restaurants, the top-tier chefs. We do very little in retail. That's just always been, we've tried several times, but it's been an extremely hard and difficult market for us to really gain any traction in. And again, I think it comes back to consumers deciding with their pocketbook every time they shop at the grocery store and being educated, doing the research on your own to figure out what you're eating. But most of the time, if there's chicken breasts on sale for $2.99 a week or $2.99 a pound that week, they're going to purchase that instead of buying a heritage chicken, even though they don't know what they're missing out on.
What's the price point if you were to compare per pound for some of the chicken that you're offering?
We're comparable to organic prices, depending on where you are, maybe even a little less.
Yeah.
So that's where we see the great value. Organic fetches a premium at the grocery store, but what exactly are you getting? And when you look at everything that we do with our products on a small scale, there's a great value there. But it's comparable or less than organic products.
So when you're selling mostly to chefs, how have you established particular relationships with restaurants, and you're kind of just channeling your orders into that, or do you pick up regular clientele through your website? Like, what is the how do you reach your customers?
We actually sell to upper scale food distributors,
center of the plate,
who know where our products can fit in, which is, like Ryan mentioned, the white tablecloth restaurant, the high-end resorts, casinos, the people who actually appreciate the product. The website is a small portion of our business, but it's an option for people who want to buy our products. We might not have a grocery store around, like I mentioned. We do sell to Whole Foods in the Southeast region. The people all over the country, we ship orders every week to California, to Texas, across the United States. And it's giving us an option to provide retail items to the entire United States.
And outside of the turkeys, which you mentioned, you kind of do as a more specialty process. Are all of your other offers year round? Like you're saying, you're slaughtering each week. So what does that look like?
I'm sorry, I think it was breaking up a little bit there.
Oh, so you're saying with the turkeys, that's one of the products that you offer sort of in a special time period. But I was wondering if you kept your other meat offerings available year round, and maybe we could talk a little bit more. You're saying you're slaughtering stuff each week. So how you keep up with that demand?
We try to get projections and forecast as best we can, but really we're so far in advance. I mean, it takes, from the time we get the actual chicken breeder to pull it sent over, it's over a year before we have a bird ready to go to market.
Yeah.
So we're planning well in advance. But every week we do have fresh and frozen available on our poulet rouge, our pintade, which is our guinea hen, and our pheasant, as well as grass-fed beef. And those are all available on the website. We take pre-orders for our Heritage Black Turkey, usually beginning around September, October. Those are harvested in November, and we ship those fresh and frozen.
I'm assuming you guys must eat a lot of the food that you produce, and I'm again curious as to how the best chicken in the world transfers onto the plate. So what are there different ways that you like to prepare the food, or the poulet rouge, or any of the other breeds that you work with?
To me, I think to all of us here, the best way to prepare the meat that we produce is just the most simple recipe you have, which is I like to do sea salt and cracked pepper. Everyone today wants to put barbecue sauce and all these flavorings on their meat to give it flavor. And when you eat a true heritage bird that's been raised the right way and processed correctly, using air chilling and everything we've talked about today, you really don't want to put barbecue sauce or any other flavorings on it, because that masks the true meat flavor, which is unbelievable. A lot of Americans haven't ever, had the opportunity to taken the opportunity to try that themselves. And people always say, the first time they try the poulet rouge, they normally reference it to the bird their grandmother used to cook on Sunday afternoons, or great grandmother. They used to be running around in the backyard, and they had it for supper. It's amazing the difference in flavor and quality that our heritage chicken offers.
Yeah.
So masking that stuff, we do not recommend doing much with the bird. It might cook a little bit faster. The poulet rouge might cook a little bit faster than a commercial bird, but Stuart mentioned the skin is so thin on it that it crisps up really well, and there isn't that layer of fat underneath it. The bird takes so long to grow, and it gives it time for the fat to marble under the meat. So it's a fantastic meal.
And
so don't mess it up much.
Yeah,
it
sounds like your recommendation is keep it simple. So like you said, people can find you in Whole Foods if they're located in your region of the country. But if they wanted to check out your website to find out more about the farm and to visit and see some of your offerings, it's www.joyce-farms.com. Ryan and Stuart, we're just about out of time here, so it was great to have you on the line today.
One more thing I'd like to mention. We just set up a coupon code for 15% off our radio. They use Heritage Radio, all one word, all lowercase.
Yeah, well, so folks, that's another reason for you guys to check it out. So the coupon code is Heritage Radio, all lowercase, you said?
Yep, one word, all lowercase.
Perfect. All right, well, thanks again for joining me on the line, Ryan and Stuart. That's the end of another episode of the Farm Report, and thank you all for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.